So good morning, everyone. Welcome. Great to see everybody this morning. Yeah. So just a couple of reminders before we get started. Geshe-la, our resident teacher, will be coming in a few minutes. And when he comes in, we stand. And some of us will prostrate, but don't feel at all obligated to do that, just so you know what's going on and what to expect. Ask that if you have a cell phone, if you could please mute it or put it in whatever form will not be disruptive. A little note about the prayer books. If you're sitting here on the cushions, of course, they're the white books in front of you. If you're sitting in a chair, they're actually behind you. And if you're sitting in a pew, they're off on the end there. So, seems like most of the children know the drill of coming up front here, but all children are welcome to come up here if they want. And they'll be dismissed in a few minutes to head to class. And also, Geshe-la really likes to receive questions to know what we're thinking about and how he can clarify things. So there are a couple ways you can submit those. You can go to the Kadampa Center website. There's a place there for submitting them online. Or we have some quarter sheets of paper. They're here in the literature rack out here in the lobby. And you can just fill out your questions there and just place them here on Geshe-la's desk. So if you have any interest in doing that. So I think that's it. We'll just take a minute to sort of bring our minds here where our bodies are, and Geshe-la should be in a minute. Okay, so if you turn in the white prayer books to the first base sheet, we'll say Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra three times. Taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha ta Mune Mune Maha Munaye Soha. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Sam Chen Tam Che De Wahadam on the bottom of the pink sheet. We'll do Chen Reizig's mantra eight times. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 and Green Tara's mantra 7 times. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re So Ha. 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 And the children can go to their classes now if they like. And if you're here with a child for the first time, please head out into the lobby so you can fill out the intro form and find out where they're going.
I'd like to begin the program by inviting our director, Robbie Watkins, to come up and say a few words about FPMT's recognition of International Sangha Day.
Thank you. Good morning. As some people know, maybe most people know, we're part of an international organization called the Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition. That's quite a mouthful, so we refer to it as the FPMT for short. And there are now over 160 centers in this organization all around the world. And all of them today are celebrating International Sangha Day. This was started by Lama Zopa Rinpoche, our spiritual director, to give all of us and the center is a chance to rejoice in the presence of Sangha members in the FPMT centers. And Kadampa Center has a particular amount to rejoice in that we have 4 robed Sangha members here, which is really kind of the nuclear core of Kadampa Center, the way I think of it. The fact that we have 4 there is just sending off incredible amounts of energy. Geshe Gelug, our resident teacher, Geshe Sampo, and then our 2 Western nuns. And this is a day where we can, there are a couple things to think about. One, just to think how incredibly, well, we could say lucky, but we're Buddhists, so we don't believe in luck, but what incredible good karma we've created that we have a fully qualified Geshe who teaches in English right here in Raleigh, North Carolina. We don't have to travel to Nepal or any place else to receive the authentic teachings. They're literally here in our own backyard. And we have the Sangha community that supports him and all that he does. So we can acknowledge that we've created the good karma to have these teachers here. And we can rejoice in that. And today is also a day to say thank you to them for everything they do. People are somewhat confused sometimes about exactly what their status is. None of our Sangha members are employed by the FPMT. They don't receive a salary from the FPMT. They don't receive health insurance. They don't receive retirement benefits. They're supported by Kadampa Center, the members who find their presence so inspiring. The Tibetan monks and nuns have a support system back in India where they are taken care of, but when they come to the West, they've given that up to some degree, and we have to take up the slack. And our Western robed Sangha members are really, they're kind of trailblazers, and they're walking out ahead of everyone, and they don't have anyone behind them except the people here at Kadampa Center who appreciate their presence. So today is a day to thank them. At the end of the teachings, there'll be a chance to offer katas. If you'd like to make financial offerings, that creates incredible merit. If you just want to say thank you and rejoice what they do, that also creates merit. So the Kata offering will be at the end of the teachings.
And so as part of International Sangha Day, I requested that Geshe Gelug and Geshe Tsongpo and Venerable Tsuki tell us a little bit about their personal stories of how they became ordained and why that was important to them, because I think there's definitely a big contrast between how it happens in the Tibetan culture versus the Western culture, and it helps us to get to know our Sangha a little bit. They've been very reluctant to talk about themselves. But I've asked and asked, so we'll see. So Geshe-la, will you please tell us your story?
I think I already refuse. So the mantra that we recite this morning, called the Compassionate Buddha Mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum. So I just want to share one story. So it's quite a long time. So now I'm not sure where she is. There we have one African American young lady who has two daughters, and she's very enthusiastic to teach them how to say Om Mani Padme Hum, the mantras, you know. And she tell me the stories, the probably one in the probably like evenings. So she's, you know, like asking them to say this mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum. She's doing some work. So they are, you know, probably saying, because she asked them to say. So then later on she told me that she listened very carefully. So what they are saying, Oh mommy, take me home. Instead of saying, Oh mommy, take me home, it sounds very much same. And she said, what are you saying? She said, then she said, no, that's what she hears. Oh mommy, take me home. That's like new American Oh mommy, take me home. So we'll begin with some meditation, okay? Begin with some meditations. So then let me think about whether I should talk about. So this morning, so every Sunday I try here to deliver some message that's been, you know, already taught, like Samuel's case, you know, like 650 years ago, some case probably more than that. So I'm trying to deliver that message slowly, slowly, you know, to you, so then make sure that, you know, you learn something when you come to center. So, you know, I'm sure that you have millions of things to do, you know, not because you are bored and you come to center. So you're hoping to learn something. So then I feel kind of responsible for that. So this morning, so Wednesday night we are studying this book called Lam Rim, which has been taught 650 years ago by a Tibetan master called Lama Tsongkhapa. You see the statue we have here in front of the Shakyamuni Buddha. The middle one, that's Lama Tsongkhapa, the Tibetan master. As before that, you know, Lama Atisha, this Indian master who came to Tibet, re-establish Buddha, the Buddha's teachings, because this kind of, you know, kind of polluted. So Lama Tsongkhapa then taught Lam Rim now 650 years ago. So that's the teaching that His Holiness Dalai Lama practiced. That's pretty much his talks, is, you know, whenever he comes to the Western world, his talks are pretty much based on those books. So, and that book has, you know, has something to offer all of us, regardless whether we are Buddhist, not Buddhist, believer, non-believer, you know, there's something to offer, just simply as a human being. So, last couple of, you know, months, I've been thinking about looking quite, you know, like, from the different angles of this, you know, message in this book, Lam Rim. Basically, there's three important subjects in this book, even though this book has 800 pages. But this book talks about, you know, three principal, how I say, point in this book. So then the first one, they've been thinking about, you know, is like from Lam Rim point of view, how to help yourself, okay? How to help yourself. Lamy point of view. You could also say Buddhist point of view, you know. So there's like scientific point of view, how to help yourself. And there's like a medical point of view, how to help yourself. And there's different philosophy, how to help yourself. But here, this is simply I'm talking about from Lamy point of view, how to help yourself. Mm-hmm. So, I say, or you can say treat yourself. So it's more than, you know, like buying chocolate chip cookies from the Whole Food for yourself. Even though that sounds, you know, yeah, especially the warm one, the fresh one. So my karma is completely finished. So I've been, you know, enjoying that quite a bit. So since 15 years ago, you know, like fast probably 10 years, I enjoy very much, almost every night. anyway, so it all began, how to say, thinking. I'm not just trying to say this to just to make you happy. That's not true. I'm just repeating here, and without losing the point, and you know, maybe like changing a little bit, but without losing the main point here. In this book, it's called like Precious Human Life. So the question that needs to be asked, you know, like how I become human. So from Lamrim point of view, that's big deal. It's a very big deal. It's not just happened by chance or accident, you know, how you become human. So once you understand that, once you're able to answer that questions, how you become human, you know, so then from that answer, according to Lam Rim book, then you what you found, what you will find after, you know, like receiving this answer, then you find out the three things so precious, so meaningful, so difficult to find. So not you know, because I don't believe that you don't understand, but you totally understood that. So I want all of us, including myself, that we need to understand from our heart, you know, what this precious human life means. So, you know, like in the Western world, Europe, I've been in many different countries in Europe. So, you know, meet different peoples, psychologists, all kinds of peoples, you know. So, psychology, that's kind of interesting. So, one of the psychologists who follow Jung, or maybe like say Jung philosophy. Jung is very much about dream, very much of dream. So I'm helping her because she is translating one Tibetan text into German. So she speaks Tibetan. So I was there to help her to explain the words. She's a psychologist. So she's asking me, you know, like about my dream. So usually I don't remember my dream very well. So then one time I told her my dreams. Then, you know, that I kind of feel regret telling my dreams. She went through all this explanation, you know, like hours, you know, like at least hours of explaining this means that, you know, probably there's no Jung philosophy. So then after that, I said, okay, there's a first encounter with psychologists. So then next time, so I decided not to tell my dream. So then she's asking me, do you have any dreams? I said, no dreams. Next time, then she brought something like in the plastic jar, the dough, you can make something. Then, you know, I have no dreams, so I'm not telling my dreams. Then she said, you make something. Then she brought something. I have no idea. I've just been there. This is the first time I came to Western world. No idea, you know, from monastery. So she gave me something. Probably she tricked me, or I'm not sure. She asked me to make something. Then I said, I'm not really artistic, so I don't know what to make. She said, just make anything that you may want to make. So then I make something like this. Probably like meditation posture, but it doesn't come out very well. The process is kind of like that. Then she's telling me I'm depressed. That all goes. Anyway, so now there's probably psychology there to help you, you know, to find out what you're feeling inside, even though sometimes it's not true. So like, so now here, you know, what we need to do is like me, you, everybody, you know. So there's approach in Lam Rim teachings how to help yourself. So what do you do in the morning when you wake up? You think something very special about yourself, precious. You know, time and time again, you hear people come to you, Gishila, my life has no meaning. That's not true. That's not true. You know. Then looking down on yourself, you know, I'm not good, you know, I'm bad. This is all, that's not what Lama Tsongkhapa asking each one of us to do. That's not helping yourself. So helping yourself, if you cannot help yourself, you cannot help other people. So this is very important. So not just here, so make sure to get here, in our heart. So as a Buddhist, you know, whether it's a beautiful day, sun shining day, it's a raining day, doesn't matter. So you are supposed to think, you know, that minute you wake up, you are supposed to think that your life is so precious, so meaningful, so difficult to find. In order to get there, first we have to find answer why, how I become human. Why is so big deal? So that's something like that. Feeling good about yourself. You know? So then as I said, you know, half jokingly, but then eventually you will say, I can't believe this is not precious. See? I can't believe this is not butter. You know? Because it's exactly tastes like butter. That's why you can't believe it's not butter. So same here. So eventually, then when you say precious human life, it means something deep. It means something deep. So that's the beginning of Lam Rim teachings. That's why where we should think, you know. So we make mistake, whether it's a mistake made by you or other. What we need to do, we need to forgive. Forgive. It's yourself, you have to forgive. Other, you have to forgive. So then make sure that you don't repeat, you know, this mistake again. So that's how, you know, because mistake does not make you incapable of improving yourself. So that gives me so much strength. Every moment, you know, every one of us, you know, we make mistakes. You make mistakes. I make mistakes, you know. So I used to chase a dog when I was young in monastery, 16 years old. I went to monastery when I was 7. I love dogs, different way, but I like, you know, to chase the dogs. I constantly chase dogs, you know, so I got a lot of trouble with myself because doing that, and chase dogs everywhere. So, so you know, we all make, you know, any kind of mistake. So as a, you know, Buddhist, what you do, you don't blame yourself. You don't say you're bad because you did something wrong. So what we do, but we don't think about what we did wrong every day. But we do think, as a Buddhist, we do think about what we did wrong. We do things. When we think, when we are about to do some kind of purification practice, then you deliberately, voluntarily bring them up. No fear, no guilt, no regret. Regretting towards something negative, that's positive. But regretting towards something negative, positive, that's negative. So we bring them up, then we do something for that. And in the end, instead of feeling bad, you feel good. See? You feel good. Instead of feeling bad, you feel good. That's true. That's very true. Because you did something for that. You know, it's almost like, cleaning the dirty dishes. Instead of just feeling bad, just looking at that and hoping somehow it will go away or it will clean by itself. So you just clean them, you just bring them, clean them, you know. So that's so that's what we do. So my point here is, you know, each one of us in this room has responsibility to how to get this message across. There's one topic called precious human life. So we all need to find out what these people 650 years ago, 1,000 years ago, these people are talking about that. some of them are getting so much out of them, not thinking about emptiness, bodhicitta, all these complicated topics, just simply precious human life. So, just like, how to synchronize that piece of information into our heart and see, then rise, going deep, that's meditation, going deep inside, then rise from there with the awareness that, that my life is something very precious, very meaningful, so difficult to find. Not because how I look, not because how I dress, not because, not any of those. Simply that you are capable, fully capable, every moment to improve, to generate next moment of happiness. So that's very important. I just want to share that with you. I've been saying this last couple of months. I just thought it's very important. So not because I don't believe, I believe that you don't understand. You do understand, but just having here is not good, but we need to get down here. So then the meditation is like USB port. Okay? So this computer, hard drive, I'm not sure, this hard drive over somewhere probably that needs to synchronize here. So then meditations means GOM. No. So then meditation is simply to help yourself. To GOM top nimo chua, GOM meditation, top power, pneumon, afflicted mind, delusions, negative mind. More you have that, then you are completely polluted. Lot of pollutions. You can breathe. Lot of pollutions. Negative mind does not only mean attachment, anger, jealousy. It also includes looking down on oneself. My life has no meaning. I'm not good. I'm bad, I'm this and that, wearing this, all different layers of levels, that's not true. You are totally going towards something wrong directions. So this is very important. So thinking, something. So now when you think of a precious human life from your heart, you are thinking something precious about yourself. That will help to feel bad about yourself, telling yourself, I'm not good, this and that. No, this is all not good. That's no good. No, it's not helping. That's not helping yourself. That's how helping yourself begin with something like that, according to Lamrim teachings. In the very initial stage, that's what you do. It may take times, to synchronize that into your heart. So then, every day, minute you wake up, you think of a precious human life. Isn't that wonderful? Thinking something good about yourself. So, if you don't believe, you read Lamrim book, it's already there. I'm just repeating. I'm not just making up last night, thinking, what I should say, something that makes people happy. It's not like that. I'm just repeating here. So that's whole goal, whole point is like that. So then from there, then you think about impermanent change. Then you think about, samsara. So the way I think samsara is like this, is like imperfect existence. Because, one day I'm happy, one day I'm not happy, one day it's good, but it's like kind of like wave, it goes. That's called, in Buddhist, there's a special term called samsara. So once you recognize that you are part of that, then expectations to be perfect in your job, whatever it is, So then it will also help just understanding nature of samsara helps you to overcome from fear to be perfect. In Buddhism, perfect means enlightenment. So enlightenment, I don't think is that easy. So that's why, before 3 months, what I've been saying, positive mind. Buddhism, all these thousands of books, it's all come down positive mind. Easy to say. We need more positive mind, less negative mind. Because negative mind is no good. More positive mind. Good health, less blood pressures, no good mind. So now, how to develop good mind? That's exactly how you begin thinking about precious human life. Okay? So, then, gomtop nimochuma, power of meditation is to reduce, to have less negative minds. So now, you need something. If this hot, it's too hot, you need something to cool down. What you do, you put cold water. you're just simply sitting there or praying, or does it get cold? I don't think it's going to get cold. You have, how's the counter? How is it? Countermeasure?
Counteract.
You have counteract. Same. Everything's counteract. Looking down on oneself, like down. What do you need? You need counteract. What is that? Precious human life. So then, when you think of a precious human life, then it will reduce negative mind, such as looking down on yourself, not feeling good about yourself. It will reduce. So first of all, you have to find answer, how you become human. How you become human. It's not just you, there's so many species on this planet, you know, there's like what we call animal, then there's so many different realms, different species. So some of them we interact, some of them we cannot interact, there's so many of them. How come that I become human? So this is very big deal. It's very big deal. From Lamrim point of view, it's very big deal. So then our personal point of view is maybe like kind of boring. Maybe I don't want to become human. Why I become human? All this asking the question. So that's important, okay? So you understand? Yeah. So now we'll do meditations, okay? Meditations. So now we understood the power of meditation is to help less negative mind or reduce negative mind, okay? Negative mind. So meditation that I'm going to lead, you know, is like... first, please use your left hand here, left hand. This is called nine, this simple meditation. There's a couple of them. First, it's begin with this. It's very good, you know. This is called nine round breathing meditations. Lung, lung, lung ro. How is it? Okay, long roll. First, we need some explanation. Before we wait, long roll. Long is oxygen. How you say? Like this kind of getting complicated. Like, do you believe in like gross oxygen, subtle oxygen, very subtle oxygens? Do you believe that? But very subtle oxygen, you cannot separate mind and subtle oxygen. Very subtle oxygen, you cannot separate. You cannot separate. They always go together. That's also oxygen. So, lung literally means, you know, wind. Wind. But in this case, you know, it's not wind. It's like sometimes there's energy. Anyway, lung roll. Roll means wasted. Wasted energy or wasted oxygen, whatever you call. Okay? Energy or oxygen. How? Because mind is scattered throughout the day, thinking about this and thinking of this, like, you know, like all kinds of things, like even I cannot count when I wake up, you know, then like throughout the day, how many thoughts that, you know, pops up like popcorn in the microwave, pop, like that, not just one by one, it's like same time. So that's how been the oxygen or energy been wasted, not able to concentrate, okay? That's called lung ro. Gu means nine. It's nine round. The nine breathing meditation. Cell means eliminate. So this is like eliminating wasted energy. So you begin with this left hand. So then it's very important to make sure the body is straight, okay? Straight, because this is about, how I say, energy and the channel. So, so first you inhale. This one. This two. This three. First set. So one, same hand, first left hand, block the left nostril, left hand, block the left nostril, and that's like, you know, same direction, huh? Then inhale. Inhale from the right nostril, okay? Then again. Then again. How you count, each time when you inhale, you count, okay? We'll do it again one more time. That's one. That's two. Maybe it will help, it might help to get rid of stress. Okay, I'm not 100% sure, but that's actually getting rid of wasted energy that's been stuck in our channels. So then that's first round, three, right? Now the right hand, please. Right hand, block the right nostril, inhale. Three, six. So now from both nostrils, inhale, exhale three times. Okay, that's called 9 round breathing meditation. First you use your left hand three times, right hand three times, then both nostrils, three times. That's called 9 round breathing meditations. So then after that, you can do, if your mind is still upset, not good, you know, good meditations, comfortable cushions, comfortable body, comfortable mind, you do meditations. So then second one, that's normal breathing meditations, okay? So what you do, you exhale. See, different 9 round, you inhale fast. In this, you exhale fast, okay? Exhale from both nostrils, inhale. So we'll count 12. 12, we'll count 12. No. So it is important here, we have to be mindful, fully alert, the number, okay? Each time when you inhale, you count here in your mind. So you can do 21, 30, 40, 50, 100 you can do. Now it will help to develop your concentrations. When you're able to concentrate, that's the only way to produce calm mind, peaceful mind. That's why you concentrate. Not because you come to Kadampa Center, not because you're Buddhist. No, only that, you know, it will produce calm mind. If you have mind, you concentrate. That's all. Okay? So, we'll begin. First exhale from both nostrils, then inhale. Okay? if you count more number, it helps. If you count 30, 40, 50, you know. So here the important thing is that make sure that you count correctly. Each time when you inhale, you count 1, exhale, inhale, that's 2, exhale, inhale, that's 3, exhale, inhale, that's 4, exhale, inhale, that's 5. If you think 6, then you start all over again. It's actually 5. If you think 6, then you go back from the scratch. Okay? So that will help. Okay? So you can share that with your friends. And only reason why you concentrate, because someday, qixi, someday, concentrations. Qixi means concentrations makes your mind calm. Not a beer. Not a cookie, not a beer. Beer or bear? Beer. Not beer, not cookies, not cheesecake. So concentration. Someday, qixi. Why we learn? Lo yitol. Wisdom liberates. No wisdom, no knowledge, no wisdom. No wisdom, no solutions. That's why you learn. So mere faith is not good enough. You learn. So because why? When you look at the 6 perfections, the last 2 perfections, number 5, concentrations. You concentrate simply, it will produce calm mind. You learn because it liberates. Okay? So then please, seek up, happiness for other sentient beings. Please think about this topic. And I see this is very, very important. So being here 15 years, mumbling here. So said many things, like, can you imagine every week, twice a week, 15 years, how much I've talked, many, many hours. So my point is to know this just topic, this precious human life, there's something that all my friends, including myself, there's something that we should think. Because Gomtop, the power of meditation is reduce negative mind. So meditation is necessary. It's not just important, it's necessary to get rid of any negative thought. If you can't get rid of your anger, attachment, this is also, at least the thinking bad about yourself, you need to get rid of that. So then how? So you have to concentrate. You have to have something to think about. So in this case, we think about precious human life. And you can read Lamrim about precious human life. And you can also, this morning I said, Steve Jobs, Apple, everybody's so fun with the Apple. Fan of Apple. So he gives some talk. So I've read this last part, first, second, third, is all about. He never used the word precious human life, but it's all about how to feel. This last segment, last part of the talk, is all about impermanent, and there's the precious human life. That's kind of interesting. Because he is like a businessman, very scientific mind, and thinking something quite interesting to find out something, piece of information from Lamrim to help yourself, every day, to think. So that when you read, then you'll understand, okay, I think it's also good. I read that whole article, so it's kind of very interesting. So then with that, probably I'll stop. So then, according to Sarah, that everybody has to say something about. Yeah, give them. Thomas, you have to So, if you have any questions about my monastic life, any questions? Yeah, please do ask me. Then that's a good way to probably interact. Then I will say something. Otherwise, kind of feel kind of strange to say something about me.
I'm not so much. I am interested in how you ended up in the monastery, but I'm particularly interested in how you and Geshe Sangpo ended up in the West. Were you chosen? Did you volunteer? Did you? I don't know.
I'm yeah, very, very, very good question. So the Gijisan part he answered. It's kind of interesting because, you know, like when you are young, so but not very religious minded, but you know, you still pray. You pray. I'm not sure about here in the West, but in Tibetan community, as a child, you know. So I used to pray, you know. I used to not just pray very seriously, based on my ability, like 9 years old, like 12, you know, like. So I'm praying to get Swiss Army knife. Swiss Army knife, red one. praying. I'm not sure, like, and I'm praying to able to go to England. I'm praying to go able to come to America. I'm praying. So then when I was like early 20, I just give up, you know, praying for that. I just give up. So somehow I'm not sure. So that. I really pray every puja, then prayer getting. That's my prayer is kind of serious when I look back now. Swiss Army, being able to go to England, able to come to America. These three things I seriously pray. Somehow it's very interesting. One of my teachers lives in Switzerland. He comes back. He has one Swiss Army knife. Not red one, but black one. Somehow I got that. And I said, wow, you know, really, as a kid, you say, oh, my prayer is working. So that's maybe part of that is probably my prayer. Then second, you know, by the way, that knife is still in my hometown, in my family house. So they cherish so much because you don't get this kind of knife there, you know. So then second part, so Lama Sopa Rinpoche, you see there, see, that picture there. When I finished my study in the monastery, then after that you go to small monastery, there where you learn all the rituals. So I was in that monastery. So then I received the invitation from Lama Zopa Rinpoche to come to North Carolina. So that's how I came, you know. So, and I'm not sure should I go or not. Then I discussed with my friend now who's teaching in Singapore. So I talked to him. So he said something about email. I have no clue what's email. So he said, Rinpoche is inviting you to teach in North Carolina. So then that's how I came here. So far, last 15 years, it's been a good year. So far, we have no problem here. So I've been here. This is like 4 years here. Before that, in the basement, 10 years or something, 10 years in the basement. So then all the work that you put together, you know, so... As I'm saying, this center, some of you may think, oh, this is my center. It's not my center. I'm just here, you know, to mumble the words. So first, this is 3 years commitment. So then say 3 more years. Then say 3 more years. Then 3 more years. Now 3 more years never finish. So that's how I got stuck. Yeah. So, and you know, so, This is our center. This each one of you, you know, this is your center. So I think you put so much effort, so much energy, so much time. So now this we have, you know, beautiful place. So old one, whether you are in, if you are out, then you are completely out of the building. It's not like now, you know, we have big space. I think, you know, very good. This is all your energy. So I, you know, want to thank. So then, I answer questions?
Yeah, and also Geshe Sangpo, yeah. How he came to be.
Arila Khandesli is.
Why I came to be.
Yeah, why are you?
Because Kishila.
See, let me tell a little bit about Geshe Sangpo. You know, he was born in Tibet, Eastern Tibet. His family, they are still in Tibet. They are not in free world, they are still in Tibet. So then two of his uncles, they are monk, you know, they are from Tibet. So they escaped from Tibet after 1959. So then first time when I met Geshe Sangpo, he's 13 years old boy. So I met him in Buddh Gaya, that's where the holy site in Buddhist holy site. So His Holiness is giving teaching there. So all the monks from my monastery, we rode a bus 7 days, day and night bus ride, all this bumpy road and all like. So, and when we finally reached Buddh Gaya, and he's waiting the outside the bus station because his true uncle is with us, and he's wearing this really poor robe, very poor robe, like this very skinny, and there's like, how you say, what is it called? Not all the way down here, but it's half a little bit here. Very, very skinny. So then, I don't know him, you know, he don't know me. I was born in India, he was born in Tibet. So we are not bloodly related. So then his uncle got very sick. Then his uncle makes me promise that I'll take care of them. Because there's no him and his brother, there's a couple of them. So that's how now he's like my brother, you know. So that's how, and like since 13 to till now, we are together. When I came here, as I said, technically I don't have kids, but you know, but I also have, you know, many monks to take care back in the monastery. So when I came here, he's the one who take care of them. So now he came here, so then now another monk take care of him, you know, take care of them. So that's how Gijisambo, yeah, he like basically came here to help me. First time when I came here, I'm by myself. I'm living with one American couple. I don't know how to drive, you know, so, and my phone bills every month like $400, $500 because I constantly call India because there's no talk to Tibetan, no Tibetan, there's some Tibetan, but, you know, I constantly call them. And then whenever the phone rings, I'm excited, and I thought it's from India. So then, you know, then later turns out there's pretty much quite a bit of them from telemarket. So I couldn't understand. So then I pick up them, there's something saying something. I couldn't understand. I go downstairs. I thought maybe someone's calling me. I called them. So then they said that later I find it's the telemarket. So yeah, any other questions? Yeah. So maybe now Chukila can say something. So I will only say if somebody asks me questions, I will say something about my life. But you don't have to ask questions. But you know now, do Chukila want to say something? Yeah.
I don't think I've heard the whole story of how Venerable Chickie became a nun. So
yeah,
I'd be
so
very interested to hear that story.
Tell, you know, so like. Chukila is from North Carolina, you know, so I think it's good, you know, to hear from Chukila.
Okay. So I first met the Dharma in 2003. I came to the Kadampa Center in the other location, and it was love at first sight. I immediately connected and found it to be really helpful. When I was when I first came, I had a real quick temper and really wanted to find some relief from that, and started coming to Discovering Buddhism class and Geshe-la's talks, and what I now know is Lojong is what really helped me, but I didn't know that term back then. It was just, you know, these real practical teachings of try this and see if it helps. And so it helped a great deal. And as I saw sort of my own mind changing, then the more I studied, the more I kept seeing that the quickest path was to give up the householder life. And so I'm a very deliberative person. I spend a lot of time thinking before I make decisions. And so I think probably I first started talking with Tendrin Law about the idea of ordination and what it would mean, and then many conversations with Geshe-la, and I did a retreat out at Srivasti Abbey, a 3-week retreat they have for exploring monastic life, where you really have a chance to look at sort of what your questions might be and what you might not even be realizing is in the way. And then after consultation with Geshe-la, I decided to go to India And I had sort of set that as my year. Like at the end of that first year in India, I would decide one way or the other that I needed to, you know, commit one way or the other. And so at the end of that year, I still very much wanted to ordain. And so I asked Geshe-la, and he said, oh, you have to wait.
So the primary conversation is you going there to learn Tibetan.
Yeah. Yeah, my intention was to learn Tibetan, and I did take Tibetan classes, but I didn't stay long enough to get really very good. And so Geshe-la said that I would have to wait, and then the visa rules in India changed, and I was planning to come back just for a couple of weeks, and the week before I came, they changed the rule so that when you leave the country, you have to stay out for 2 months. So I was back here at the center for a couple of months. And then right when I returned, I had planned to move into, there's a nunnery in Dharamsala for Western nuns called Tosamling. And they also have some lodging for lay women. And so I figured I would just live there until I was able to ordain. And then things happened really quickly. Once I came back, it turned out that Geshe-la's teacher, Ken Rinpoche, was actually in Dharamsala for teachings with His Holiness, and I was able to ordain then, so it all happened very quickly, and I'm so grateful to Geshe-la and his teacher for allowing me to ordain, and I have to say it's a fantastic choice for me. I certainly wouldn't say it's the thing for everyone, but it's very, it's helped me so much in terms of by making the commitment, then it's not something I'm reevaluating all the time. There are just certain things that I expect of myself, and so I don't have to keep asking those questions over and over again. And so, you know, I'd had the first wave of Western monastics, Geshe-la was talking a little bit in the last class about the hippies and the people in the 60s and early 70s who all were the first to ordain from the West. And, you know, I have so much gratitude to those who have laid that groundwork, so it was something I could imagine doing myself. And in conversations with some of them, you know, they would often say the commitment and the vows that you take, if you see them as telling you what you cannot do, then you won't be able to sustain that. But if you see them as the protection to help you do what you've decided you want to do, then it will only add benefit for you. And so I think there's great wisdom in that. And so I'm just incredibly grateful to the center for letting me be here and for Geshe-la for allowing me to ordain and helping make that happen. So
Pavana, I will say something. So the Gisa will say, otherwise Gisa will not say anything. So anyway, so... you know, this is different, you know, like, but, you know, a lot of struggles there, you know, so when you become, like, ordained in a very young age, no having no any clue, you know, in my case, 7 years old boy. So then you go through, you know, struggles, you know, like later in teenage life, then it moves, you know, so it's not, as a, after 1959, when there's, you know, like, probably like, even though inside Tibet, there's like probably like tens of thousands of monks and nuns in there. But after 1959, everything, you know, like turned upside down. Everything's turned upside down. People escape, you know, so a lot of many would die. So anyway, there are like 500 monks. They are able to less than 500 monks. They are able to escape from Tibet. So they are struggling how to re-establish the monastic systems. So they are, you know, like elder, they are going to different parts of the towns in India looking for new generations to become joined to their, you know, monastery to pass down their system. So my teacher, not the Kensu, but he's already passed away, one who passed away in Switzerland, he came to my town, hometown, Sikkim, like, you know, Himalayan region, very remote. He came there to basically, like I say, what do you call, looking for, recruit. So before me, you know, there's three boys went to monastery. So then the monastery is like deep south in like that. At that time, it takes 7 days to by train to get there. So they went there. So then every 3 years you get, you know, break from the monastery to visit your family for 2 months. So they came. So then what I noticed, you know, when they went to the monastery, all the village people, we are a small town, everybody knows. You know, everybody knows, you know, everybody. So when they leave, you know, everybody goes there, you know, like they're offering them kapa and all kind of things, some kind of little bit of money. So when they come, so then I thought, you know, just nice thing to do, you know, so that like people are like getting a lot of attention. So then when they come back, then they are telling me story about how wonderful, you know, going down there, riding a train, the bus and the car. That really pumps me up. So then I thought, okay, I would also like to go there. So then I asked my parents to send me there. I'm the first child. So they are not able to send. So anyway, eventually they let me go. So then I went there. And the wait, long ride. So at that time, you know, because my teachers, my family don't have money, enough money, not much money. My teacher, of course, they don't have money. So what they do, so they just, you know, we are kids, so they just grab from you from here, back, they just throw from the window in the third class train, because there's first class, second class, third class. Who, like, fast come, fast get seat. There's no seat number. So then we hire some coolie. The transport, they carry your luggage, and there's like we have this, you know, blanket and all this. Like now you don't see that they're like called, like you open that, then you put all your blanket, then you roll them, then you tie in the boat side. So it's like long open. So you put all your blanket there. So then you roll them. Then you there's two bells, you know, you tie them there. So we don't have bells, but just rope, you know. So there's our stuff. Then they throw that fast. Then they throw each voice. That's kind of scary, you know. So go to the monastery. Very next day, I want to go back to my home. So then too late, too far, too late, no money, no choice. That's how I got stuck. So then every, you know, like many, many years, I'm not, you know, like, I did manage, then slowly, I mean, you know, like, so now I realize, me crying, throwing myself on the ground, you know, all kinds of things doesn't help. It's not going to get me to my home. So then, you know, slowly, so then make some friends. So then the little bit sad part is, you know, that my monastery, every evening around 6 o'clock, I look at these mountains. Behind this monastery, there's mountains. I truly believe if I can cross the mountain behind there, that's my home. Because I've seen shape mountain in my hometown. So I thought that's, you know, where my parents live there. So every evening I've been looking there and know exactly what's happening at my home. Cows are coming down, my mother's milking the cows, and I think when I'm a little bit stronger, I'll cross that mountain. So I did went beyond there. That's not my hometown. There, my hometown is like 1,000 miles. So actually, like chasing my desires, that's how I become monks. Not because I want to enlighten, you know. So then slowly, then you make some friends, you know, there. Then each time when you go back home, so then that 2 months, you know, vacation, sometimes every 3 years, sometimes 5 years, sometimes 6 years, you get a chance to go to see your parents. Then, you know, of course, they treat you very well, especially mom, you know, makes you want the best food. So then when you leave, then people come to offer you kapa, you know, they give you some money. So I don't want to give that up. So I just, you know, keep me sending back to monastery. So then when I reach my 20s, then I've been thinking about maybe I should stay or I'm not sure to stay. Maybe I should go to army, to join army. Then I'll, you know, like monthly salary or some kind of money. Then I can maybe support my family. Then going back and whatever. Then late 20s, I decided, you know, so I'll stay, finish my study. So then I'm here now. Yeah. Thank you so much, Rishi.
Good morning, everyone. I became a monk just for fun. Just joking. When I was 7 years old, my parents sent me to the local Chinese school. When I come back to home, I always demonstration, like meditate.
Always demonstrate meditation.
Then I ask always like my parents, I want to be monk. Then finally, my mom really wants to be maybe his sons become a monk. My mom. Then finally, my mom decided to send me one of the nunnery. The nunnery is distorted already distorted. I think I'm 7 years old. 7 years old. Then my mom sent there. Then me and two of my friends studying there how can read alphabet in Tibet alphabet. Then almost like a few years studying there. Then when I become like 12, then I ask my parents. I really want to go to India for be monk. Then finally decided they send me in India. First they send me in Lhasa. Then Lhasa we have 21 people.
Uh-huh.
21 people. Who live in the border.
Higher.
Yeah, then we pay for him. He promised we all take in Nepal.
Nepal.
Yeah.
Oh.
Then anyway, we cross the Himalaya Mountain. We have 21 people. Then by our feet. Then he told us take only like 2-3 days. But we took 21 days. We don't have enough food, no clothes. Anyway, after 21 days, then Nepal police waiting for us for welcome to jail. Yeah. Then everybody take in the jail. Maybe three of the us, me and my friend, we are like one is 11 years old. Me and another one is 12 years old. Then they just plan the outside the jail, but everybody take in the jail. Then finally, some people came to from Nepal, Kathmandu, the Nepali city. Some of the Tibet people come to help us take in the capital city. Then after that, I met the two geshi. They sent me to India in Bodh Gaya. The Geshe-la alias, we met in Bodh Gaya, 1985. Then I become I met many monks there. Then I became a monk in India. We came to Sera. It's not for fun because we had studying a lot. Every morning we had to wake up 5:30. Then we have to go to so many different class, debate class, and receive teaching from teachers. Then we need to do many things. It's not for fun. Anyway, then that's my story. Then 2001, I became a geshi. Then 2002, I went to the Jime Monastery, studied Tantra. Then 2008, I came to here. That's my story. I have been monk almost 27. Thank you.
So one thing is common as a Tibetan, you know, so makes your parents is really happy.
Yeah.
Simply that knowing that you are monk. My parents, they are very, very happy. No, just simply that I'm, finished my study, and they are still, my mom passed away, but my family, they are still happy that I'm an Islam monk.
I forget to tell Santi because it's very important for me because at least I can make happy my parents. Whenever I called my mom said, if I'm die, you don't have to extra pray. you be monk is most enough for me. What is she told me?
Mm.
That's very important for me.
Mm.
Also, my hometown, East Tibet, then people think, I don't know if this is truth, not truth, but many people think if you beat 100,000, the stupa, pure gold, then much better than you have one monk. That's the East Tibet people think. Yeah.
Okay, so we hope that you are not bored to just listening our stories. Not that interesting, you know.
And during the dedications, if you'd like to make any offerings, we'll line up down the aisle here. And yes, katas, and we have, if you didn't get the announcement or you forgot your kata, there's a basket that you can borrow as well, so don't be shy.
Okay, in our prayer books on the pink sheet, we'll read the dedication verses from Shantideva. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. Savior of the snowland teachings and transmigratory beings, who extensively clarifies the path that unifies emptiness and compassion, to the lotus in the hand, Lord Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be fulfilled. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatari, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama, ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the Siddur's moral way, who serve as a bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjinas' victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplish magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. Om Tari Tu Tari Tu Re So Ha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Esoha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Esoha.